The modern city has been layered haphazardly on top of the old. I wrote this book while living in Toronto's ghost of a garment district in a 10-story warehouse. Many other buildings like it have long since been boarded up, glass panes shattered, smokestacks holding their breath. Their only remaining capitalist function is to hoist large blinking billboards on their tar-coated roofs, reminding the gridlocked drivers on the Lakeshore Expressway of the existence of Molson's Beer, Hyundai Cars, and Easy Rock FM. In the 20s and 30s, Russian and Polish immigrants darted back and forth on these streets, ducking into delis to argue about Trotsky and the leadership of the International Ladies' Garment Workers Union. These days, old Portuguese men still push racks of dresses and coats down the sidewalk, and next door you can still buy a rhinestone bridal tiara if the need for such an item happens to arise. A Halloween costume, or perhaps a school play. The real action, however, is down the block amid the stacks of edible jewelry at Sugar Mountain, the retro candy mecca, open until 2 a.m. to service the late-night ironic cravings of the club kids. And a store downstairs continues to do a modest trade in bald, naked mannequins, though more often than not, it's rented out as the surreal set for a film school project, or the tragically hip backdrop of a television interview. The layering of decades on Spadina Avenue, like so many urban neighborhoods in similar state of post-industrial limbo, has a wonderfully accidental charm to it. The lofts and studios are full of people who know they are playing their part in a piece of urban performance art. But for the most part, they do their best not to draw attention to that fact. If anyone claims too much ownership over the real Spadina, then everyone else starts feeling like a two-bit prop, and the whole edifice crumbles. Which is why it was so unfortunate that City Hall saw fit to commission a series of public art installations to celebrate the history of Spadina Avenue. First came the steel figures perched atop the lampposts, women hunched over sewing machines, and crowds of striking workers waving placards with indecipherable slogans. Then, the worst happened. The giant brass thimble arrived right at the corner of my block. There it was, 11.5 feet high and 11 feet across. Two giant pastel buttons were plopped on the sidewalk next to it, with wimpy little saplings growing out of the holes. Thank goodness Emma Goldman, the famed anarchist and labor organizer who lived on this street in the late 1930s, wasn't around to witness the transformation of the garment workers' struggle into sweatshop kitsch. The thimble is only the most overt manifestation of a painful new self-consciousness on the grid. All around me, the old factory buildings are being rezoned and converted into loft living complexes with names like the Candy Factory. The hand-me-downs of industrialization have already been mined for witty fashion ideas, discarded factory workers' uniforms, Diesel's labor brand jeans, and Caterpillar boots. So, of course, there is also a booming market for condos in second-hand sweatshops, luxuriously renoed, with soaking tubs, slate-lined showers, underground parking, skylit gymnasiums, and 24-hour concierge. So far, my landlord, who made his fortune manufacturing and selling London Fog overcoats, has stubbornly refused to sell off our building as condominiums with exceptionally high ceilings. He'll relent eventually, but for now, he still has a handful of garment tenants left, whose businesses are too small to move to Asia or Central America, and who, for whatever reason, are unwilling to follow the industry trend toward home workers paid by the piece. The rest of the building is rented out to yoga instructors, documentary film producers, graphic designers and writers, and artists with live workspaces. The Schmata guys, still selling coats in the office next door, look terribly dismayed when they see the Marilyn Manson clones stomping down the hall in chains and thigh-high leather boots to the communal washroom, clutching tubes of toothpaste. But what can they do? We are all stuck together here for now, caught between the harsh realities of economic globalization and the all-enduring rock video aesthetic. Jakarta. Ask her what she makes, what it says on the label. You know, label? I said, reaching behind my head and twisting up the collar of my shirt. By now, these Indonesian workers were used to people like me,